Hey, everybody. Good to see you. Steven, it's glad you could make it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You got your Wi-Fi worked out this time?
I do. I do.
Happened last time, huh?
We were the whole office is down the whole day.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, so it just wasn't this. It was trying to help our customers.
Oh, brutal. Well, you had sent me an email. I'll let you jump in and start. You want to just go ahead and ask so everybody can hear the question?
Yeah, my question is mainly on how to create a dynamic team that is, that's productive, and also there's some cohesiveness there to where we're all working towards the same goal.
Okay, good. How many of the modules have you already watched, if
I'm
any?
almost done. I'm almost done with module one, the whole series.
Okay, good. So, some of the things that go into team cohesion, there's like the philosophy, which you got in module one. Understanding the three jobs of people, that when you want performance, that those other jobs are as critical as the performance job is. And so when you understand that, you will begin to see a difference in the way people start to show up and interact. And so what we're after is, of course, what we call discretionary effort, that feeling that I believe in something and I believe in that person and they believe in me and they care about me and they care about my unique needs. That can help you. Now, one of the tools that I'm going to recommend, in addition to just that philosophical understanding, module four has a how to have better meetings protocol. So how you run your meetings has a direct impact on how cohesive people feel. It's one of the ways that you can drive that cohesion. The other thing that can help you is when you understand the unique motivators in a team context. So, the five leadership languages, did you take that quiz ever? Did you ever see that on my website?
No, I haven't taken it yet.
Okay. So I recommend you take that quiz and give it to your team also. And here's what that quiz is designed to do. It's based on a lot of experience that I've had doing 360s on leaders to discover which things are unique to which person. It helps you map the minefield. So a simple example is that all of these different motivators exist on what are called polarities. So, for example, if somebody's primary leadership language is boundaries and your primary leadership language is connection, and you want to go talk about your vacation with somebody whose primary leadership is boundaries, they're going to find over time that you're wasting their time. Whereas if somebody's primary leadership language is connection, never talk about your life and who they are and are curious about their vacation and their family and whatever, they will start to feel like a cog in a machine if you're just getting down to business. And so there's lots of other dimensions here to this, but it's a free quiz. It takes 5 minutes. You can get it on my website. And basically you can use that to map the minefield of your team members to figure out like what are they motivated by. And just to be really clear, the purpose of the quiz is not to diagnose and put someone in a box. It's to help you know how to start a conversation. And the results of the quiz, you can click on any of the types. And you can find a description and how to have a conversation with somebody about that type to see if it resonates with them. In the same way that we're all a collection of different things, we're not just one thing. And just because I articulated it in a certain way, while they might say, yeah, that's true, but I wouldn't put it that way, that's really helpful. That's where you get a really good conversation going to know what motivates them. So, for example, if they agree that kind of boundaries really resonates with them, but what I just said doesn't, then oh, okay, that's what boundaries means to them. And that's what connection means to this person. There's also mentoring and performance and recognition and feedback and all these different other dimensions. But it's a great way to get to know what motivates a team member and what establishes your credibility with them in an emotional context. Make sense?
Makes total sense.
Okay, cool. So let's have you start there and just sort of keep digging around a little bit. There's, you know, what you're talking about is kind of the entire program in many ways, you know.
Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
We have to watch in some of these modules.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll start to get the hang of some of that, but like module 4 has some really good stuff around just the tools and tactics for how you set up structures that encourage a sense of cohesion. You know, you can also look at, for example, another classic mistake that leaders can make is in their reward system, how they reward and incentivize team members can sometimes create unintended consequences. If you have a complex thing where handoffs are weird and people aren't getting along for some reason, sometimes a RACI chart, which is also discussed in module 4, sometimes that can free things up. So there's lots of reasons. There's lots of different tools. And as we go along, you can share with me more and I'll be able to kind of guide you through like, okay, actually it's more this. As you get more specific, I'll be able to give you more specific tools. Sound good?
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. We've got more people joining, which is great. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining. Glad to have you. Just a kind of a reminder for everybody, I think the best way to handle our time together is if you would be willing to drop a cue in the chat. That'll alert me that you want to ask a question, and then I'll just go through in order, whoever does it in order, and then we'll go from there. See Harpreet there. JD's back. Welcome, JD. Good to see you again. Oh, there you go. Go right ahead.
I actually, we talked about that previously, Shane, about the polarities, I think, in that 7 management polarities, and I'd taken that quiz or that assessment there. Is that something, I printed it off at that time, is that something that you've gotten to where it will send it to us after the fact or our results yet?
No, you know, I haven't even touched that quiz. Okay. The best thing to do is definitely print it. Unfortunately, I'm still behind the eight ball on that. And then, you know, that quiz is really not very user friendly unless you have the book, you know, so I don't know if you have the book, but at some point I'll get it all worked out where people who are in the program will get access to that and all that fun stuff. But yeah, for now, that one really just gives you like, oh, I'm high on this. Great. I don't know what that means, you know, and that's why I don't promote that quiz.
Gotcha. So I guess going to the kind of question or direction and advice looking for, I just gotten off a call with one of the managers that I report or that reports to me. We were doing, I'm trying to do 15-minute one-on-one weekly calls with them to help increase communication with all of my managers. The only problem is every time that I get on the call with him, it is like an hour to an hour and a half. And he's just not really staying within that kind of time constraint. He's coming to the meeting prepared, definitely, with a lot of items and agenda things that he wants to talk about. But we're trying to keep it to a 15-minute window because we're doing it weekly. Mm-hmm. And he tends to get off onto these tangents. And then his voice changes quite a bit from speaking regularly. And then he'll talk really quiet and like almost try to slide something in under. So I didn't know if there's any advice in directing or working with him a little bit better on communication techniques or how we can.
Yes, great.
It's almost like we're both going at each other the entire time. So
yeah, great question. So 15 minutes, you can't achieve very much in 15 minutes, and that's okay. And that's fine. You're not having to achieve a lot. You're wanting touch points. So what you want to make sure you have are other containers where content can go. So in the same way that in a team weekly team tactical meeting, somebody could be talking and going, oh, you know what? The real issue is that our technology isn't up to date and we need to upgrade our technology. And the other issue is I don't think we have the right staffing. Well, that's not a weekly tactical issue. That's a long-range strategic issue. And you shouldn't be burning tactical meeting time discussing strategy items because they take a lot longer. They require research. They require stakeholders, decision-making. And so I always recommend leaders have every 3 months on the calendar, a 2-hour strategy meeting. And all your job is during the weekly tactical meetings is you are simply identifying, hey, that's a strategic parking lot issue. Yeah, the technology that we need to discuss, great. I'm going to write it down. It's going on the board. That's going to populate the agenda for in 2 months. We're going to get to that. But today, we're only focused on what's happening between now and basically a week or two from now. So it's helping people understand what timeline are we working within? What is the purpose of what are we going to achieve in this meeting at this time? And you have to be the one to guide them in that. You have to be searching for and listening for that's an item that we're not going to be able to cover in 15 minutes, and nor is it necessary that we do it today. So that sounds like a really big issue that you and I need to work through. We can't do it in 15 minutes. I'd like to schedule a separate one-off meeting with you that's 30 minutes, or we can dig deep into that, or an hour if you need an hour. And then your job is to create those little containers where you continue to refine and protect that 15 minutes. And you are the one who will set the agenda. So they will either be going, okay, he won't tolerate me bringing this up. So you'll just have to keep reminding him, hey, appreciate that. Sounds important. We've got 15 minutes. I need you to bring next week. And this is the other thing you can give him. You can give him a structure. When you come to this meeting, I need you in advance of the meeting. I need you to send me the top three things you're working on and your top three priorities or whatever you decide it is. But you give them a really specific container so he doesn't just show up and go like, yeah, I mean, what have I got going on? I've got this and then there's kind of that. And then he's going to be meandering. And so, or you can ask, you can say, in our 15-minute weekly meeting, I need you to bring me the top three things that you need my input on. So before each meeting, I need you to send me in advance the top three or the top five or whatever number you think you can cover. And you're helping them understand your job isn't just to come in and talk about work with me. Your job is to talk to me about the things that you most need my input on. Does that help?
It does, yes.
Great. So that'll provide a lot more structure for you. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And are your other team members going to be joining this call? I mean, I know we. Sorry, is that Megan?
Yeah, Megan's on and Clay is on. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Welcome, Megan. Welcome, Clay. Great to meet you guys. If you have questions, if you want to ask a question, drop a Q in the chat box and I'll get to you. And that goes for everybody on the call. So if you have something you want to ask, that's what we'll do. And glad you guys could join us. So for everybody else on the call, JD is a graduate of the program and he came back and brought a couple of his team members back into the program. So we're really glad to have you and excited to be working with you again. Okay, who's up next? I see nobody has put anything in the chat, so I can just talk at you guys for an hour if you want. Who else has a question? Oh, actually, I think Reese, you emailed me one, right? Where are you, Reese? There you are.
Here, if I could figure out how to unmute, I would be speaking. Sorry. Yes, I did. And awesome. Actually, I'm trying to pull up that email before I type in my cue so I can not be as long-winded.
First of all, I'm sorry that your boss, your new CEO that bought the company didn't get in touch with you. I'm also sorry to hear that you guys are not going to get more work from them, but it sounds like you have another
more new work.
Right. Yeah. Which was a pretty important piece of that equation, as I understand it. And so your question for me was, it sounds like you have another business that he did not buy that this client wants to continue working with you in. Do I understand that right?
Well, okay, so two things. The business that he's in, that he actually owns before he bought ours, services the same clients that I did before he bought me. Before he bought the company.
Yeah.
So he has existing business there, and it's a pretty big footprint. It's about 400 seats.
Okay.
Just about. So when I had my meeting with a client when they were in town here last Friday, they said, if I was Mr. CEO, I would move all those operations to Manila because RFPs are coming and he won't be able to compete. So if he's there now, or if he proactively starts moving the things over there, by the time their RFP comes in, he's going to have a better handle on what pricing he could give, right? So that's kind of gave me a little, okay, well, I can still build an organization in the Philippines, expand what I helped him do with what his current business is. So right now I have a footprint of about 45 seats. And if these 200 comes in of his own seats in Mexico, then, you know, it's almost like new business coming in for me personally, not for him, but personally, I'm growing this organization for him.
What's the question? I mean, is there a conflict of interest? Do you have any legal things?
The issue is, wait a minute. Let me go find that question so I can better. It's a two-part question. The second one we can wait. Is that a good indicator of stability, you think? Or I guess for me, but for me personally, yeah, I think that has hope, but not getting any new business from this company and he's kind of lost favor with them kind of shortens my time window. Instead of a 5-year career with this particular person, I'll probably be there maybe two tops if no new business comes in. But then again, last week I was ready to go, you know what, let's go separate ways. So things are volatile. So
you have the option to go separate ways sometimes when you're, you know, do you have like a buyout clause or anything?
No, not really. But I do have connections in the industry. I mean, I wasn't just going to go buy and leave. You know, I was going to make sure I have somewhere to land before I do that.
Okay. Well, I guess my question for you is, what do you want? Let's start there.
Ooh, that's a lot. Well, I want my company back, but it's too late in the game.
Why do you want your company back?
Well, meaning I want not my company back in itself. I mean, but I want, I guess I got used to 2004 earlier than that. So 18 years of being basically not doing what I want, but having the flexibility to go, hey, I'm going to go this way. I controlled my own destiny at one point when it comes to my organization, of course.
Yeah. You just want the freedom of being an entrepreneur again. Sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So you tested being an employee, which you hadn't done in a while. It sounds like you're working for a guy who's not terribly responsive. So there's not like a real sense of partnership there.
And that's where the drop off is with the clients. He that's where he lost favor. He vanished for 2 months at a time.
And if you don't have to be there, I don't know why you would stay. If you have options, I don't know. It's not what you want. It doesn't sound like there's a match there. I mean, you did that for a financial transaction.
I kind of presume. I think the first time when I talked 2 weeks ago, I was kind of attached to these group of people that I brought with me. So now they're with me with this new guy. And I'm kind of like, man, I don't know if I want to leave just yet, just because it's only been not even 2 months. I mean, I've secured their jobs. That's not the problem. They have.
Yeah. You're just feeling like you'll leave them with a bad boss, which you probably will.
Yes.
Probably not a great boss. That is very real. So let me propose something to you. And that is this. Module 5, the whole first part of module 5 is all about making what I call crystal ball decisions. So, you know, there are two kinds of decisions in the world that we navigate. One is a data-driven decision, which is simple. The data shows you the answer and you make a decision based on the data. And then there's crystal ball decisions. Who should I marry? Should I get a divorce? Should I take this job? Should I start my own company? Those are crystal ball decisions. No amount of data in the world will ever give you any information to make that decision with clarity. So there are actual guidance techniques that I teach for getting you in touch with the most critical center of your guidance system. Okay. And they're taught in module 5.
Module 5, okay.
And there's also then helping you understand a difference between a desire and a decision. A desire is a feeling, a decision is an action. And so it is worthwhile to separate these two things long enough that you can investigate the desire, because desire is an incredibly powerful indicator of your guidance. Now, there are different kinds of desire. There's what I call phantom desire, and there's what I call real desire. And these practices that I will teach you in module 5 will help you distinguish between phantom desires and genuine desires. So classic example of kind of the metaphor of desire and how they work differently would be, you know, if I eat fast food every single day for 3, 4, 5 days in a row, that might satiate my palate, my tongue. I might like ice cream a lot. Mm-hmm. But in time, my body will begin to develop a craving for a vegetable. And that deeper craving is that deeper guidance. It's that. And so the same is true with desire in general. You're like, I want that fancy car. I'd like to have that person in my life. I'd like to have more money. I'd like to have those things might be legit and true, but there's a process that you can use that I teach you in how to determine whether this is your authentic real desire, whether it's not your real desire. So I would say do the exercises in that module and then come back to me with what you learned.
Okay.
And there's also another great video in there about once you get to the place of I need to make the decision, guess what? How you make the decision, how you execute the decision has a huge impact on the outcome. So for example, there are two ways to land a plane. Or there's two ways to get a plane on the ground, I should say.
Yeah.
You can crash it or you can land it. One is fast and the other one has a landing sequence.
Yeah.
And so once you get clear on what it is you most want, then we can get clear on what the landing sequence looks like. And then I can help design for you the kinds of conversations you need to have in what order in order to get what you want.
Perfect.
Sound good?
Sounds great. That actually answers question 2 as well. So
yes, I was actually going to say your other question. I have the same answer for those.
Yeah.
So spend some time, clear some space, make sure you got some margin, and really try to dig down, because the seat of your guidance is actually your heart, not your head, not an analysis. It's your heart. And I need to help get you in touch with that. And there's an exercise or two that will help you get there.
Noted. Thank
you. Awesome.
James, we don't talk about crashing planes.
Sorry, Jason. Yeah, that was a bad metaphor. Unfortunately, I used it before I knew you, so that was my mistake.
All right.
Okay, Laura, you're up next. I see you in the box. Reminder to everybody, feel free to drop a cue if you have a question. All right, Laura, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So I was on Instagram recently, and I saw you had a little reel about leading from a place of love, for lack of a better phrasing. How do you, and sorry to get kind of woo-woo and metaphysical here, but basically, like, I've recently discovered how to do that, but that required like years of work and an incredible shift. And how do you get other people there? You know, because like basically in my case, I was too overwhelmed and too weighed down. I wasn't taking proper care of myself, all that good stuff. It wasn't till like I started getting my own house in order that I was able to meet people in that regard. Like be like, wow, you're great. I love you. You're fantastic. I was much more weighed down by like, wow, I suck. I haven't gotten this done. I haven't gotten this done. How do people make that jump, or how do you help other people make that jump?
What's that?
Module 5 might not be a bad place to start.
Yeah, I mean, module 5 can get you in touch with some things. That's a little bit more about discernment and decision making, which is very useful. But I don't think this is in the modules. I think this is really just, I guess in a way it's module 1. Like it's respecting and understanding that people are not just there to perform a duty. They're there to find fulfillment, enjoyment, and they're there to learn and grow. And so all three of those, you know, for those who don't remember or haven't seen module one, you have three jobs the moment you're hired at a company. And the moment you hire somebody new, they have three jobs. The job you hired them to do, and then the two jobs that they got when they were born. And what they got, the job we all got when we were born, there were two jobs. One is to find fulfillment, enjoyment, purpose. And two is to grow and learn. And then three is, yeah, we want to perform, of course. But like when you fire somebody, those first two jobs are still theirs. They're going to have it till they die. And the, right. those leaders that understand the wholeness of a human being that comes to work for them and that tends, that is attentive to and aware of the interrelationship between those things, they tend to do better. They tend to outperform. They tend to, sorry about this. We got a puppy there.
No worries.
Christmas puppy still gets a little agitated. So, and in a way, you know, if people feel a little off put by the word like loving your team or loving your people, that's fine. You don't have to love, but love in this case isn't so much about an emotion. It's about a commitment to behavior. And the behavior is marked by kindness and truth. And that's how you lead in a, from a place of love. It says, I promise to treat you with kindness and respect. And I also promise not to use honesty as an excuse to be mean. And I also promise not to use kindness as an excuse to avoid a hard truth. A loving act is to balance the kindness and the truth telling together. And my experience is that some of the nicest people I know are the most unkind in the workplace, because what they're busy doing is they're busy trying to be super nice, and people have no idea where they stand with them. And they get more and more frustrated and more lost. And then when they finally get fired, like, where the heck did that come from? Like, that came out of nowhere. You were so nice to me all the time, but what they were being is just dishonest. And so that's where I want to make sure people understand. When I talk about love and kindness in the workplace, I do not mean nice. Nice is a form of manipulation. I mean genuine compassion and kindness for a human being that occupies that space with you for that period of time. And even if they're driving you crazy and doing a terrible job, what would it mean for you to bring kindness and truth to that person's life? Okay. You are the only one who can do that. You can't make others do that. But if you begin to operate that way, if this becomes your center of gravity, you will find that other people are getting it evoked from them. And if they aren't having it evoked, they're not a fit. You know, you've got to find a way to either leave that job or transition that person out, depending on what power gain you have. But my experience is when you commit radically to that purpose in your own life, you will begin to evoke it from others.
Okay. So, that's good to hear. Okay. So my next, do we have a cue in the chat? Because I was going to ask a
follow-up question.
Have any of you in this group experienced that? Like where you have seen that kind of shift toward greater kindness or been able to enact that? Is that a fair question?
Ask anything you want.
Okay.
Unfortunately, hi, it's Michelle. Unfortunately, I've never experienced that. The things that we hear and learn here, I have not had the pleasure of experiencing along my travels. It might start out that way in the initial relationship, but as you get to know the individual, you're like, yeah, you were a wolf in sheep's clothing. So, unfortunately,
And this is the thing, Michelle, you know, to speak to that, the more you begin to embody that kindness and truth telling, and you notice that nobody is getting that evoked back, it's usually an indicator that it's not a great fit, and which we've kind of already established for you. Like long-term, unless there's some major changes, it's not a great fit. But what is good for you is to keep practicing holding that center of gravity in the face of resistance, in the face of people who aren't compassionate, in the face of people who are manipulating or lying, in the face of people who are not good to you. Not that you need to put up with BS, but for you to hold on to yourself in the midst of that, in the face of that. That's where you're going to continue to grow in your muscles. And again, Michelle, we've already discussed that, you know, we know this organization probably isn't your best fit long term, but you have other things in your own personal life that you want to keep working on and you want to free up bandwidth for. And so, you know, that's why I'm not suggesting you need to leave.
No, I agree. But, you know, but it has been unfortunate, even within my travels, you know, even in a previous life, as I sat interviewing with a manager, actually it wasn't going to be my direct manager. It was overseeing the department. So, and we were talking about other things. He presented as, you know, a great leader, perfect, somebody I can learn from, you know, going to lead from that kindness. We sat there and chatted for 2 hours. I was on an interview for 2 hours talking about, but when it came down to it, he was the reason I left.
Yeah, that can happen. People can talk a big game. I mean, that's pretty common. People talk a big game all the time. And all you have to do is observe behavior. And by the way, words are behavior. People talk about, well, words don't matter, actions matter. Guess what? Your words are behavior. If I say you're an idiot, those are actions. That's an action. That's an abusive kind of caustic action. If I come at you with hostility, that's an action. And so, yeah, you've got to watch people over time to decide whether or not they're safe and you should trust them. But my main thing is, for all of us as leaders, you will not be thanked. You will not get medals. You'll not be rewarded for expressing your kindness and your truth. Eventually you will, but it's just what I'm talking about is very different. You know, most organizations do not think in these terms. They think only in terms of the tactics of leadership. And I have plenty of tactics, as you know, and I believe in those. But I have this deeper orientation that is informed by the three jobs that every human you interact with has, no matter what they do for a job. And so you are being invited into being the bigger person. And guess what? If you're a leader, that's what you're being invited into. And if you don't want to be the bigger person, this is for all of us, and I'm just speaking to you, Michelle, then we're in the wrong place. If we want to be like everybody else, then that's good. Then you should be a leader. But I think everybody on this call knows that they are being asked to live at a higher standard, to absorb more arrows than other people have to absorb. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, one of the reasons I create a space like this is so that you can come and talk about these arrows, and we can get them out, and we can start to patch them up and heal them. And we start to give you context for how to keep leading in the face of that. Sorry. So, Jason, you were raising your hand.
I was just going to answer and say I've experienced both. So honest feedback. I like what you said there. The kindness is an excuse to be dishonest, or honesty is an excuse to be mean. And it's the way it's presented. So a long time ago, or a couple of weeks ago now, sat down and said my people weren't ready for genuine feedback. And once they realize that if they can finally get over the hurdle that you're attacking them, and then it's in presentation, it's not an attack. Sit down and just say, this is it. This is how I rate you. This is what I see. I give you the opportunity before I'm hitting the submit button to convince me maybe I missed something. I'm not with you 24 hours a day, even though they think you should be. Well, I do this on a weekly basis. Guess what? I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. So this is our chance to have a conversation and you to convince me of the products that you deserve a higher rating. The individual is quite angry. And then it comes back the next day and say, once I thought about it more, you're right. You know, and so it has worked, those honest feedbacks. But this individual came from a very caustic work center that she tried to correct as a manager, and her defensive walls were up. And I think that's the wolf in sheep's clothes. The leader before me just gave candy fives to everybody that says, hey, everybody's wonderful and it's great. And she was so disenfranchised with leadership and the organization that she didn't believe anything was going to change. And unfortunately, when change comes, it's facing her in the face to say, well, I rate you as a 3. So that going, it took a personnel change in that section to get rid of the bad apple. Really holds meeting. One bad apple spoils the bunch, and it's unbelievable the attraction to negative things. So sometimes it's a management or a personnel change to get that organization turned around. And now one of my worst sections is my biggest torch. They're running around with the message. They come into me. We have a standing Tuesday meeting with no agenda, which, yes, I have to take the meeting module because it's eating up a lot of time.
and come in with an agenda, but we sit down for about 2 hours and they come back for the next 3 days and they love it. They're like, holy cow, they come in little nuggets and I understand what you mean here. And it takes time. So it took a personnel change to get them over that hump, to have a reflection back into their selves. But it also then takes that individual character to realize they want to get out of that shell. So you're always going to have those bad ones that you're never going to get through. And then it's frustrating too. You know, leadership comes with rewards, but not awards. And you can take care of the people and right and left, but it's, what have you done for me lately? You know, there was an individual that was going through a rough time of life and financially divorced, all kinds of things happening. And we took care of the individual, place to live, a whole bunch of other stuff that was against my wing commander's wishes, but we took care of him. We went deployed, he came back and he didn't have the opportunity to change anything. So he still needed a car, he still needed a house, he still needed all this stuff. And when I, you know, he was supposed to come into work, he MF'd the heck out of me for all intents and purposes and said, you know, you're not taking care of people. So had to turn it around and say, slow your roll. I'm going to take this as an emotional moment for you. And you need to reflect on a lot of things that we have done. And just because you're upset with right now, and you're probably upset with that you took no action, and now you're stuck in this pickle, it's not my fault. So the genuine feedback can be used. They do get over that hurdle, but it's a lot of time. And that was my last week with Shane, is how do you find that time, you know? And that's the economy of words conversation. So it does work, consistency and a lot of time.
So the other thing that you stated that I want everyone to be aware of is in any form of leadership, you become a blank screen for people to project their parental issues onto you. And I know that may sound weird, but we all do it. There's something about someone in authority that evokes from us childhood parental issues. And so that's one of the things you're having to learn to do. And part of the way that the arrows don't stick is you learn to realize that you're just a blank movie screen and they're a projector. Not always. Sometimes they're coming at you because you were wrong. You know, but what you just described clearly was about the person was completely emotionally unresourced, right? He had no strategy in that conversation. He was purely ballistic and emotional. And he was inappropriate and out of line. And you did a great job of going, okay, good. This is that movie screen moment. I'm not letting it stick to me. The moment that projector turns off, it's just light and it goes away. Nobody painted me with anything. And that's the really important thing for a leader. You've got to be able to know, like, when am I just having the projection put onto me? And you know, it's only light. And the moment you turn the projector off, there's no harm, no foul. The movie screen isn't touched, not harmed. That's a really important part of you staying healthy and whole as a leader. And being able to distinguish between when are they giving me feedback that's a really valid point that I got to grow in, and when are they just putting things on me that I know just aren't me, and that's not who I've been. I've never had that feedback in my life. For example, that's a great way to tell. Like, if somebody comes at you with a whole lot of litany of things you do bad and you're no good at, and you've never in your life had that feedback from your partner, wife, husband, other bosses, peers. Great indicator that is not likely going to be your problem. If they come at you with something that you have heard time and again, guess what? Start looking in the mirror. It's usually an indicator.
And Shane, to Laura's question as well, this is JD speaking. I just listened to a podcast yesterday about a Pygmalion effect, which talks about our beliefs of ourselves influence our actions towards others, which then impacts others' beliefs about us, which then causes other actions towards us. And then it's just a reinforcing circle with that. And so it's an Apple original show, but Ted Lasso, if anyone's caught that, is that type of thing where he gets put in that situation where everyone's against him and rooting for him to fail. And he one by one wins everybody over through that process of just being kind and genuine to them, and ends up converting the whole organization over on that. So,
JD, that's great. And for those who are interested, both elements of module 2 and elements of module 3, I do a deep dive on the very dynamic you're describing. I don't use the same metaphor, but it is the same dynamic that I want people to understand, which is, everybody develops a story about reality. And that story is serving a purpose. And that story will always evoke emotions. And the question you have to ask is the story I'm telling actually the best story to tell? Because there are so many ways to think about the experience you're having right now, whatever that experience is. And I go into quite a bit more details, but in the simplest terms, all we're talking about is the most common things that human psychological perception does, which is we bend, we block, and we blend data. So we block certain things. For example, right now, very few of you are paying attention to what the bottom of your feet feel like. That's data that's coming into your brain right now that is using a perceptual filter to block it. You're not paying attention to it. If any of you feel that I am a huckster and just trying to take your money, that will bend anything I say. You will put a perceptual filter over me that listens through the ear of suspicion. If any of you are trying to manage vast complexity, you will blend information. You will take two things that are different but are similar enough, you will put them in the same category. It's how we make it, it's how we manage the complexity of everything coming at us. Is bend, block, and bend, blend. Those three things are what we do. And that creates the story that we tell ourselves about what's happening in the world. But the reality is far too vast and complex for anybody to truly, you know, have access to all of it. And so a lot of my work in leadership coaching is helping leaders develop better stories, stories that are more resourceful, stories that are more flexible, stories that allow you to navigate through complexity. Instead of the story that says that person's lazy and they're arrogant. Okay, maybe you're right. And maybe you have data to support that story. My question is there another story that might create better outcomes for you? Is there another story you can tell, other data you can draw from to tell a better story so that you don't get caught in this whirlwind of emotion that you're living through? Because to JD's point, that emotion then, that new emotional state and that new story you tell will actually begin to evoke it from others. And that's the thing I want us to remember over and over again. We are mimetic beings. Humans are mimetic. We are mirroring what we see. Children from the youngest age mirror parents. And so in the same way that you as a leader, if you begin to operate consistently and repeatedly in a certain way, people will begin to mirror you.
I was just going to add, Shane, I think I've been on a journey for the last few years, right, myself, where I'm trying to see people as holistic beings, like you said, not just seeing their role in my organization, but to see that they actually have the same responsibilities outside of work as I do. And that impacts, depending on who they are, it may impact them more than me or someone else. And so I'm just trying to be conscientious of it and acknowledge that I see that in them and that it's okay for them to be having a hard time. So I agree, some compassion goes a long way, but you know, to you have to be consistent. But what I found is, like you also were saying something about, you got to look in the mirror if you keep hearing the same feedback. I found that I've got like a couple people that I now go to that I can trust and say, look, what do you think of this situation? Just to kind of do a litmus test and see, like, is it just me being defensive or is it something that I did? That's really been helpful. It just has to be somebody you trust, right? That someone that can say, that's really going to say, yeah, if I was sitting in the other shoe, I probably would have interpreted it that way. And they feel safe telling you that information too. And they're not always like someone above me. Like I use someone at work who's actually, you know, like two levels below me. Not because it's just, I brought her into the organization. So I've got a special, I think, rapport with her, but you know, I don't give her all the details naturally because she works in the same organization, but just to kind of give her the scenario, like, how would you have interpreted that? And at least I can gauge, okay, maybe I was a little too harsh, or maybe I wasn't harsh enough sometimes. Maybe I wasn't firm enough. And like you said, you start to be too nice and you're not really sending a clear message. Yep. So that's helped, just to get another point of view.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Great stuff. Yeah. having people that are safe, especially if you create the container for them. So it's important, especially within the organization, that you would say to them, hey, I need to have a conversation where anything I say, I'm not held accountable for. You know, I just need a moment. Can you create a kind of a blast box that I can just share, even if you're not planning to vent, but just to kind of prepare them for, like, anything I say here is not me making decisions. It's not me, you know, it's just me needing to talk. And I want you to be the kind of person where I can have those conversations. And yeah. People usually feel quite honored and are very capable of it. Most of the time.
That's very true. You're right. Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Who else has something they want to talk about? I don't know if Clay or Megan want to just introduce yourselves. You're new to the group, I know, and be glad to hear from you guys. You don't have to ask a question, but maybe just tell us who you are, what you do.
We can get this going. Hello, Megan O'Dell. I'm the regional pharmacy manager for Williams Brothers for long-term care. So I deal with our long-term care division. I've been with the company for about 13 years now, so gone through the ranks and kind of seen it all. Don't know if we want to jump into it now, but probably one of the big things I'm struggling with right now is I have different levels of professionalism in the managers that I manage. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are healthcare professionals and hold a license with that. And then I have a couple others who are really strong, kind of gone up through the ranks and don't have that degree behind their name. And so trying to manage those on an even playing field without burning those, without the professional title out, there's something that comes with that title that I think I need to kind of navigate how I'm managing them so I can maximize their potential without burning them out, if that makes sense.
I'd love to hear more about that. I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
So I have nurses, pharmacists, healthcare administrators that are some of my managers, and they kind of understand some of the level of dedication, professionalism, things that come at you as a manager. And then I have other managers who have come up through the ranks, mm-hmm. probably two or three of those, who don't understand that they're not failing when things get overwhelming or things didn't go as they expect, and they feel like they have their legs cut out from under them, if that makes sense. Whereas
do you think that the primary difference is a degree, or do you think there's some other way that they're
face value? That's where I'm seeing that. I'm trying to figure that out. That's the only differentiator I can find. And again, I've been a manager for about 9-10 years, gone through, you know, floor level all the way up. So you see this on that floor level management, you're managing employees of different various levels. This is just a different thing that I haven't encountered in these years. And that's at face value. That's the only thing I can figure out.
Okay. I'm going to just, not because I know, I mean, this is in, like, you know, 30 seconds if you give me something. So mm-hmm. I want to push on the story you just told a little bit. You know, sure. We talk about the story. The story is people with these degrees are able to do it. People without aren't in this moment. That may be just a correlation, not causation, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
So I think it's very possible you're just dealing with immature people, inexperienced, immature people. And the reason that might help you is because they're not likely to go get that degree. So you might feel stuck. If you feel like that's the reason, the degree, and they're not going to go get that degree, you might be like, nah, I'm stuck. And I just don't want you feeling stuck just yet. I'd like for you to kind of be open to how this program might help you to think about training up leaders and managers,
right,
and giving them resources to do that. So that's my kind of invitation to you. And as we, you know, over the months, get to know each other a little better, I'm going to be able to be a lot more useful to you. But as my initial eyedropper into the pool, I just want to give you that little suggestion. Does that sound fair?
It does sound fair.
Okay, cool.
And it's more of the burden of management that comes with it and dealing with that, I think.
Yes.
The stress that comes with having to obtain those degrees is the only thing. They've had to deal with that. So again, I understand it might not be that, but there's something there that I need to break through.
You may be right about it. I just think that in my experience, if someone wants to be a manager, they can do an amazing job when they begin to understand the stuff that I show people.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you're talking about resilience, probably partly, and the lack of resilience. And that's just immaturity. I mean, that really is just, you know, the way I think about resilience is I think about it the way I think about a balloon. You know, like when you take a fresh balloon and you try to blow into it, it's really hard. It really resists. Once you've blown it up and you deflate it, it's really easy to blow up again. And that's what leaders who develop what's called capacity, right? They're just, their shoulders get bigger and broader and they're able to handle and hold more. And you can't get there unless you've been stretched like a balloon being expanded. So, you know, they may just need their balloon expanded a bit more. We'll see. We'll see as it unfolds. Harpreet, you raised your hand. Did you want to jump in?
I did. So I work in the healthcare industry too. So I work with, I work at our site as a clinical facility. So we've got pharmacists, nurses, doctors, and then below them, we've got laboratory people and so forth. So I found that the ones that are highly licensed are usually not great managers. And you can't tell them that because they think because of their degree, they should be in management and they should just be at the highest level. And I had a really, particularly with doctors, I had a really difficult time. Plus I'm a nurse. So there's already that, like, well, you're a nurse. You can't manage me. You can't tell me what to do. You can't, you know.
Doctors so, are notoriously the worst managers, by the way. Just no offense.
Right.
Really are.
So I've just, again, some you'll never get through and they've just left the business. So I've been really fortunate that finally I've had leaders above me that are supportive of it, right? So prior to that, there were other doctors above me that kind of were not giving me the authority that I, or actually just making it clear that I had the authority. So that was not helpful. But now I think those who are here to stay, some are still resistant, but they, you know, it's just building that rapport. It's, I've always gone to them asking, not telling. I've gone to them asking for their input, you know, like, can I have your input before I speak to the group? Can I get your input before I even speak to someone else? And letting them know that they're the first person I went to get their opinion. And I think that now they're okay. So if something I sent out and they weren't aware, they'll usually say, hey, Harpreet, I didn't, you know, you didn't really catch up with me. And I would say, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that, but it's not a huge thing anymore. So I get it. They're just a different breed. And it may be because of all the things that they've had to become a doctor, but they also have egos. And so I feel like I've just had to stroke their egos a bit. Which is like against a principle, but I don't like to do that, but I just, it's the only way to get them to buy into what you're trying to do and what you're trying to say. And if they feel like they're a part of that change and they get some credit in it, it's not.
That sounds wise.
Yeah.
Necessary at times. Megan, thanks for your introduction. Clay, do you want to go?
Yes, my name's Clay Williams. I am business development manager with our healthcare company. I'm a fifth generation pharmacist. My father and uncle are the current majority owners and CEOs, I guess. If you can have more than one CEO, they make it work. And I'm currently into various different areas of our business, from manager to executive board member overseeing different divisions of the company, including new revenue streams that we're trying to get into. So I'm just taking this in today and okay. Kind of getting a feel for it.
Awesome. Well, Clay, have you been sort of informed? Are you being groomed to take over the company? Is that kind of with the path you're on, or do you know?
Yeah, that's part of it, along with JD and Megan along my side as well. They're as well being brought up as regional managers in the company, and they attend the executive board meetings as well. So you know, they're part of our senior leadership team as well as I am. So, yeah, we're kind of the next generation, our current most of our current board members and you know, owners are getting to their you know, 60s and whatnot in life, and, you know, looking to retire over the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. And so that's a big part of why, you know, JD took this course and then also brought me and Megan into it as well, to
awesome.
Make sure that we're well-rounded leaders to take over, you know, the next generation of the company.
Well, I'm super glad you're here and glad we can help. Are you a second generation or a third generation in terms of a business ownership? Was this owned by your grandfather and started by your grandfather or started by your father?
So my grandfathers, if you will, have owned pharmacies since the late 1890s. There was a gap in the ownership in the 80s. Whenever my grandfather died, my dad and his brothers were teenagers. So there was a kind of a gap there until they became pharmacists and decided to reopen the family business. So technically in this business, the short answer would be second generation.
Okay. Yeah, great. That's good to know. That's helpful. The reason I ask is because in family businesses, there are some really interesting dynamics that shift when you become a third generation owner. And they're actually at each generation, there are certain barriers stacked against you. You have certain cards stacked against you that you may not be aware of. And so we can get into those as we kind of go along this journey together. If I start seeing them show up, I'll let you know. But yeah, so excited to be working with you. I think it's awesome that you're here and look forward to helping you guys get ready to take over the company.
Yeah, the fun dynamic, I guess, if you will, is my brother is a pharmacist as well and part of the company. And I've got a couple of other cousins that are pharmacists, including Megan, that are all part of the company. So it is truly a family business. And I'm sure that whole dynamic will shine through over the next 5 to 10 years, as you're kind of alluding to there, that I've obviously heard about.
Yep. And there are some best practices to help with those kinds of dynamics. Family businesses have unique elements to them that I help people with. So when I start to notice them show up, or I may flag them for you, even if I don't see them showing up, just so you guys are aware. Awesome.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you bet. All right. Other questions? Anybody else want to ask anything? I'm going to check in with Jason. Jason, last week you felt overwhelmed by everything, and I was giving you some suggestions on where to start and focus your attention with the work we were doing. I just want to check and see how that went.
I guess the overwhelm caught up. So that's, I usually try to put all my focus on here, but digging myself out of some holes that I let administratively slip. So it didn't do my homework, I guess. So, I mean, I know it's still on the plate. I talked about it with my deputies, my second and third, but I didn't really put anything further down on paper for values and move that ball forward. So it was a low key week.
More than anything, I just wanted to make sure you were feeling less overwhelmed and more clear about what the next steps were so that you're moving forward. But
it has 2 weeks ago, I guess, I did look at my confidant, who is not a superior. He's I'll say an equal, even though I'm in a higher position, but we have a good relationship to bounce things off. So back to Hapreet, you know, someone you trust, and that's exactly, well, pretty much all my officers were at that level. But I did lean over and said, it's the first week I have seen satisfaction in performance for the group. And that's a lot, saying from 5 years to even looking for jobs at certain times throughout. So there's a danger there of letting them in on the full inner secrets, because then I had fear that maybe they would not trust you or not see that you were even buying into your own path forward and everything else. But I've even talked about that with them. And, you know, that's that honesty and transparency that gets them on board, to show them also that it's difficult having to sit here, take all the responsibility and wield it. And so I let them know, and trying to build that resilience and the broader shoulders for them So they are prepared when I'm gone. So it's gone well. I did find that satisfaction, and I can chalk it up to the class here. I said it in an email a while ago. It doesn't seem like nothing's really cosmic. I think I've all run through the ideas in our head at certain times. Maybe we couldn't put a finger on it as to why that thought process exists, but the program has been able to lay it out in an articulatable and executable manner. And that's great. So I think that's the satisfaction that I've been able to start to find is, hey, there is a path forward. It is, can be defined, and it'll work. So I think Everything's coming together, and it's been good, but no, I didn't do my homework for you this week.
That's okay. It's not essentially you do the homework. It's essentially that you're feeling better. Honestly, that's a goal of mine, is that you feel lighter, that you feel clearer, that you feel better, even if you're not getting it all done all at once. I just want you to feel like, oh, okay, I got this. I know what the next step is. And sometimes that's half the battle, rather than the chaos of like, oh, so much to do.
Well, it's working. I'm not saying I'm an expert by any stretch. That's why I gave him. I was like, we're not done, but I have seen the first glimmer of satisfaction. So
love it. I love it. Love to hear that.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. Really quick, Megan, before we move on, do you get access to the login to the program?
I do not have access, and I don't believe Clay does either. So okay. That was something JD and I needed to connect with you about.
I will, I'll make a note of that here. You were supposed to have gotten access. I don't know what happened. I'll ask my team what happened.
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right. Who else? We got some more time if you want to use it.
Shane, it's Steve. I'm curious. How would you go about having that conversation with your team? You know, like, would it be just a direct conversation, or?
Which conversation?
The getting stuff, like things didn't get done.
Oh yeah, this is pretty straightforward. I'll literally just send an email to my web person who manages access and say, hey, I sent you an email. Here's the email. Can you please get on that? Normally she's really on top of it. If that were a repeating consistent behavior, then the conversation I would have is about our process. I would say, hey, I noticed that each time I send an email, some things keep falling through the cracks. Is that the best way to communicate with you? How would you like that done? How can we ensure that this doesn't happen again?
Okay.
That's how I would do it. But usually if it's a repeating consistent behavior or a frequent occurrence. If it's a one-time thing, I just follow up and assume it was an oversight.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Shane, I just have got, it's a off the wall question. So I was looking at your book to get the book, Seven Polarities of Leadership. So I've been trying to get most of my books either electronically, but is that one that you've got exercises maybe to do? I know some books kind of have those, and I wasn't sure if that was better as a hardcover or paperback.
I personally think it's, I'm with you. Like I love eBooks too. And what I find is certain books that are like, I'm going to read from start to all the way to the end in one sitting, I am happy to have on an ebook, but books that I have to bounce around in, I much prefer a hard copy. And this is definitely designed as a resource book. So it's meant to be quick and easy for you, quick and easy access. You take the quiz, you find out these two chapters, you know, are the most important for me right now. But in a week, you might encounter a person you're managing that you're like, oh, they're way out of bounds over here. How would I manage somebody like that? I'm gonna go to chapter 8 and check that out. And so it's way more of a resource book. I recommend it. And there's a problem with fulfillment and shipping and China and all these things. So I haven't been able to do what I want to do, which is get you guys access to that book at a discounted rate. So, and that'll be unfortunately a while before that happens. So if you're wanting to do it, pick it up. It's much better in hard copy, in my opinion.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Totally great question. Legit.
Megan, have you checked your spam mail just in case? I had that issue when I joined 2 weeks ago. I couldn't get my login, and then I bugged I bugged Shane's friend there, and he's like, We've sent it like 8 times and I look, oh yeah, my problem.
Yep, I've checked spam and junk, and then I put in a help test ticket to IT in case one of our firewalls might be blocking that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's also a possibility. Sometimes one of the best things you can do, Megan, is send me an email just to shane@shanehips.com. And you can just say, hey, please send me the information. That usually automatically flags for your IT system to whitelist shane@shanehips.com.
Thank you.
Yep. And I'm still going to work on it. You guys came through as a group, so it's a different process. So my web person has to manually add you, whereas everybody else is automatically added. And so I think that's what must have happened. You just slipped through the cracks. We'll get you access though. Who else? What else you guys want to talk about?
I just had a question for Jason that I put in the chat. He's answering. Okay. Yeah, I just find, Jason, your world is so different from mine. I find it super fascinating and super incredible that you've been able to make that shift in what most people would think of as a very hidebound environment, very, very regimented and so on, that you've been able to do that is really incredible. And I think that would just make a great story.
I appreciate it. Oddly, this, all the, everyone talking has put me at ease, not in the world. Recently, Dover Association got nominated as a president, and sitting there for 4.5 hours hearing back and forth between everyone is people. That's the connecting thing. I don't know, the different dynamic again would be the rigid structure, as you said, that we seemingly have, but I don't know that people anymore embrace it quite the same as, or maybe it was wrong, in my opinion. I don't run, turn the ship around is a great reference that I use. I don't want to stand up there and be the one barking an order as the highest paid person in the room, right? Everyone else is going to just run off a cliff if I tell them to. That's not what I need them to do. I need them to be the sensors out there and monitors and give me that information. You know, taking Lean Six Sigma and Greenbelt, you know, we only know 4% of the information that's really coming in. So you have to find those levels and layers to get beyond the strategic information that hopefully is coming back to you, so you can help steer the tactical and strategic levels. Not necessarily micromanage, but you should be at least aware of them to make sure that they're forming that's going along the vision that you're interpreting. So I appreciate it, and it is neat, but everything I've documented is for my officers to follow me. So I don't know, maybe someday I'll collect them all and put some thought.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. Or just teaching, since it's a passion for you. You're not at that point yet, but I think someday you're going to want to teach or write a book or both.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome. Good feedback. All right. Anybody else? Going once. Going twice. Sold. Okay. So we'll close out a few minutes early this week, unless anybody has anything, any last thing. And we will look forward to seeing you next week. If you have any issues, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'll make sure we get them handled. Okay. Thanks everybody for being with us.
Thanks everyone.
Great week. Good stuff.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good day next week. Bye.